Chapter 94. Another mother and daughter, in an ugly and dark room, an old woman, ugly and dark too, sat listening to the wind and rain, and crouching over a meager fire. More constant to the last-named occupation than the first, she never changed her attitude, unless, when any stray drops of rain fell hissing on the smoldering embers, to raise her head with an awakened attention to the whistling and pattering outside, and gradually to let it fall again lower and lower and lower as she sunk into a brooding state of thought, in which the noises of the night were as indistinctly regarded as is the monotonous rolling of a sea by one who sits in contemplation on its shore. There was no light in the room save that which the fire afforded, glaring sullenly from time to time like the eye of a fierce beast half asleep. It revealed no objects that needed to be jealous of a better display. A heap of rags, a heap of bones, a wretched bed, two or three mutilated chairs or stools, the black walls and blacker ceiling, were all its winking brightness shone upon. As the old woman, with a gigantic and distorted image of herself thrown half upon the wall behind her, half upon the roof above, sat bending over the few loose bricks within which it was pent, on the damp hearth of the chimney, for there was no stove, she looked as if she were watching at some witch's altar for a favorable token, and but that the movement of her chattering jaws and trembling chin was too frequent and too fast for the slow flickering of the fire, it would have seemed an illusion wrought by the light, as it came and went, upon a face as motionless as the form to which it belonged. If Florence could have stood within the room, and looked upon the original of the shadow thrown upon the wall and roof as it cowered thus over the fire, a glance might have sufficed to recall the figure of good Mrs. Brown, notwithstanding that her childish recollection of that terrible old woman was as grotesque and exaggerated a presentment of the truth, perhaps, as the shadow on the wall. But Florence was not there to look on, and good Mrs. Brown remained unrecognized, and sat staring at her fire, unobserved. Attracted by a louder sputtering than usual, as the rain came hissing down the chimney in a little stream, the old woman raised her head, impatiently, to listen afresh. And this time she did not drop it again, for there was a hand upon the door, and a footstep in the room. "Who's that?" she said, looking over her shoulder. "One who brings you news," was the answer, in a woman's voice. "News? Where from?" "From abroad." "From beyond seas?" cried the old woman, starting up. "From beyond seas." The old woman raked the fire together, hurriedly, and going close to her visitor who had entered, and shut the door, and who now stood in the middle of the room, put her hand upon the drenched cloak, and turned the unresisting figure, so as to have it in the full light of the fire. She did not find what she had expected, whatever that might be, for she let the cloak go again, and uttered a querulous cry of disappointment and misery. "What is the matter?" asked her visitor. Cried the old woman, turning her face upward, with a terrible howl. "What is the matter?" asked the visitor again. "It's not my gal," cried the old woman, tossing up her arms, and clasping her hands above her head. "Where's my Alice? Where's my handsome daughter? They've been the death of her." "They've not been the death of her yet, if your name's Marwood," said the visitor. "Have you seen my gal, then?" cried the old woman. "Has she wrote to me?" "She said you couldn't read," returned the other. "No more I can," exclaimed the old woman, wringing her hands. "Have you no light here?" said the other, looking round the room. The old woman, mumbling and shaking her head and muttering to herself about her handsome daughter, brought a candle from a cupboard in the corner, and thrusting it into the fire with a trembling hand, lighted it with some difficulty and set it on the table. Its dirty wick burned dimly at first, being choked in its own grease, and when the bleared eyes and failing sight of the old woman could distinguish anything by its light, her visitor was sitting with her arms folded, her eyes turned downwards, and a handkerchief she had worn upon her head lying on the table by her side. She sent to me by word of mouth then, "My gal, Alice?" mumbled the old woman, after waiting for some moments. "What did she say?" "Look," returned the visitor. The old woman repeated the word in a scared, uncertain way, and, shading her eyes, looked at the speaker, round the room, and at the speaker once again. Alice said, "Look again, mother," and the speaker fixed her eyes upon her. Again the old woman looked round the room, and at her visitor, and round the room once more. Hastily seizing the candle, and rising from her seat, she held it to the visitor's face, uttered a loud cry, set down the light, and fell upon her neck. "It's my gal. It's my Alice. It's my handsome daughter, living and come back." Screamed the old woman, rocking herself to and fro upon the breast that coldly suffered her embrace. "It's my gal. It's my Alice. It's my handsome daughter, living and come back." She screamed again, dropping on the floor before her, clasping her knees, laying her head against them, and still rocking herself to and fro with every frantic demonstration of which her vitality was capable. "Yes, mother," returned Alice, stooping forward for a moment and kissing her, but endeavoring, even in the act, to disengage herself from her embrace. "I am here, at last. Let go, mother, let go. Get up, and sit in your chair. What good does this do?" "She's come back harder than she went." Cried the mother, looking up in her face, and still holding to her knees. "She don't care for me. After all these years, and all the wretched life I've led." "Why greater than mother?" Said Alice, shaking her ragged skirts to detach the old woman from them. "There are two sides to that. There have been years for me as well as you, and there has been wretchedness for me as well as you. Get up, get up." Her mother rose, and cried, and wrung her hands, and stood at a little distance gazing on her. Then she took the candle again, and going round her, surveyed her from head to foot, making a low moaning all the time. Then she put the candle down, resumed her chair, and beating her hands together to a kind of weary tune, and rolling herself from side to side, continued moaning and wailing to herself. Alice got up, took off her wet cloak, and laid it aside. That done, she sat down as before, and with her arms folded, and her eyes gazing at the fire, remained silently listening with a contemptuous face to her old mother's inarticulate complainings. "Did you expect to see me return as youthful as I went away, mother?" She said at length, turning her eyes upon the old woman. "Did you think a foreign life, like mine, was good for good looks? One would believe so, to hear you. It ain't that." Cried the mother. "She knows it." "What is it then?" Returned the daughter. "It had best be something that don't last, mother, or my way out is easier than my way in. Hear that?" Exclaimed the mother. "After all these years she threatens to desert me in the moment of her coming back again. I tell you, mother, for the second time, there have been years for me as well as you," said Alice. "Come back harder?" "Of course I have come back harder. What else did you expect?" "Harder to me. To her own dear mother." Cried the old woman, "I don't know who began to harden me, if my own dear mother didn't." She returned, sitting with her folded arms, and knitted brows, and compressed lips, as if she were bent on excluding, by force, every softer feeling from her breast. "Listen, mother, to a word or two. If we understand each other now, we shall not fall out any more, perhaps. I went away a girl, and have come back a woman. I went away undutiful enough, and have come back no better, you may swear. But have you been very dutiful to me? Apostrophe apostrophe I. Apostrophe apostrophe cried the old woman. To my gal. A mother dutiful to her own child. Apostrophe apostrophe, it sounds unnatural, don't it? Apostrophe apostrophe returned the daughter, looking coldly on her with her stern, regardless, hearty, beautiful face. But I have thought of it sometimes, in the course of my lone years, till I have got used to it. I have heard some talk about duty first and last, but it has always been of my duty to other people. I have wondered now, and then to pass away the time, whether no one ever owed any duty to me. Her mother sat mowing, and mumbling, and shaking her head, but whether angrily or remorsefully, or in denial, or only in her physical infirmity, did not appear. There was a child called Alice Marwood, apostrophe said the daughter, with a laugh, and looking down at herself in terrible derision of herself, born, among poverty and neglect, and nursed in it. Nobody taught her, nobody stepped forward to help her, nobody cared for her. Apostrophe, nobody. Apostrophe, apostrophe echoed the mother, pointing to herself, and striking her breast. The only care she knew, apostrophe returned the daughter, was to be beaten, unstinted, and abused sometimes. And she might have done better without that. She lived in homes like this, and in the streets, with a crowd of little wretches like herself, and yet she brought good looks out of this childhood. So much the worse for her. She had better have been hunted, and worried to death for ugliness. Apostrophe, go on, go on. Apostrophe exclaimed the mother. I am going on, apostrophe returned the daughter. There was a girl called Alice Marwood. She was handsome. She was taught too late, and taught all wrong. She was too well cared for, too well trained, too well helped on, too much looked after. You were very fond of her, you were better off then. What came to that girl comes to thousands every year. It was only ruin, and she was born to it. Apostrophe, after all these years. Apostrophe, apostrophe, whined the old woman. My gal begins with this. Apostrophe, she'll soon have ended, apostrophe said the daughter. There was a criminal called Alice Marwood, a girl still, but deserted and an outcast. And she was tried, and she was sentenced. And Lord, how the gentlemen in the court talked about it. And how grave the judge was on her duty, and on her having perverted the gifts of nature, as if he didn't know better than anybody there, that they had been made curses to her. And how he preached about the strong arm of the law so very strong to save her, when she was an innocent and helpless little wretch. And how solemn, and religious it all was. I have thought of that, many times since, to be sure. Apostrophe apostrophe, she folded her arms tightly on her breast, and laughed in a tone that made the howl of the old woman musical. So Alice Marwood was transported, mother, apostrophe she pursued, and was sent to learn her duty, where there was 20 times less duty, and more wickedness, and wrong, and infamy, than here. And Alice Marwood has come back a woman. Such a woman as she ought to be, after all this. In good time, there will be more solemnity, and more fine talk, and more strong arm, most likely, and there will be an end of her, but the gentleman needn't be afraid of being thrown out of work. There's crowds of little wretches, boy and girl, growing up in any of the streets they live in, that'll keep them to it till they've made their fortunes. Apostrophe, the old woman leaned her elbows on the table, and resting her face upon her two hands, made a show of being in great distress or really was, perhaps. There. I have done, mother, apostrophe said the daughter, with a motion of her head, as if in dismissal of the subject. I have said enough. Don't let you and I talk of being dutiful, whatever we do. Your childhood was like mine, I suppose. So much the worse for both of us. I don't want to blame you, or to defend myself. Why should I? That's all over long ago. But I am a woman, not a girl, now, and you and I needn't make a show of our history, like the gentleman in the court. We know all about it, well enough. apostrophe, lost and degraded as she was, there was a beauty in her, both of face and form, which, even in its worst expression, could not but be recognized as such by anyone regarding her with the least attention. As she subsided into silence, and her face which had been harshly agitated, quieted down, while her dark eyes, fixed upon the fire, exchanged the reckless light that had animated them, for one that was softened by something like sorrow, there shone through all her wayworn misery and fatigue, a ray of the departed radiance of the fallen angel. Apostrophe, her mother, after watching her for some time without speaking, ventured to steal her withered hand a little nearer to her across the table, and finding that she permitted this, to touch her face, and smooth her hair, with the feeling, as it seemed, that the old woman was at least sincere in this show of interest, Alice made no movement to check her, so, advancing by degrees, she bound up her daughter's hair afresh, took off her wet shoes, if they deserved the name, spread something dry upon her shoulders, and hovered humbly about her, muttering to herself, as she recognized her old features and expression more and more. "You are very poor, mother, I see," apostrophe said Alice, looking round, when she had sat thus for some time. "Bitter poor, my dearie," apostrophe replied the old woman. She admired her daughter, and was afraid of her. Perhaps her admiration, such as it was, had originated long ago, when she first found anything that was beautiful appearing in the midst of the squalid fight of her existence. Perhaps her fear was referable, in some sort, to the retrospect she had so lately heard. Be this as it might, she stood, submissively and deferentially, before her child, and inclined her head, as if in a pitiful entreaty to be spared any further reproach. "How have you lived?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, by begging, my dearie. "And pilfering, mother?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, sometimes, a lie in a very small way. "I am old and timid. I have taken trifles from children now and then, my dearie, but not often. I..." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.